is Clark Howard on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome back to the Clark Howard Show. It is Monday, March 7th. Clark is on vacation for at least part of this week. He's in Italy. So glad to be able to be with you for a few days here on AM 750, now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB. I am Elise Klink. Our number today, 404-872-0750. How can I help you today? 1-800-WSB-TALK. Online all the time. Think Glink.com, THINKGLINK.com. I'm so glad to be able to talk to you today because right now in Chicago, the International Home and Houseware Show has been going on, and I went yesterday for the media night and the media afternoon. We shot some video, we took a look around, and there are some really interesting products that are out there. And we had an announcement this morning from Pantone, which is the company that kind of sets the color standard in this country. I thought you probably figured that just, you know, you didn't know where that came from. Well, it comes from a company called Pantone. The color of the year, I'll let you know what that is coming up in a little bit. We're going to talk about that. We also have a lot of business news to talk about today. The global markets are up in absolutely in an uproar. Oil hit a 2.5-year high earlier this morning. It's fallen back slightly. We saw gold hit record highs today as well. Stocks are down about 100 points at the moment. Silver hit a 31-year high on what is going on with Libya today. And so we're going to want to talk about that and talk about gas prices, which hit, again, a high for I don't know even know how long it has been. Gas prices, the average now, at $3.51. Although I paid a lot more than that in Boston last week, and I'm paying more in Chicago. It's a little bit less expensive in Atlanta, but the average is pretty high. Dow is down at the moment 113 points, roughly. NASDAQ is down 56. S&P 500 is down 15. There's a lot of other news as well, and of course we'll do an economic look at the top of the next hour, and we want to take your calls today as well. But I think we really need to start with what's going on in the global market. There's a conversation we started to have on Think Link Show yesterday where, you know, people are just a little bit, are starting to wake up to the idea that what's going on in Libya, perhaps Libya is not going to fall quite as easily as some of the other countries have in the Middle East. Libya accounts for about a quarter of the oil production in the world at the moment. And so what happens in Libya when you shut down the pipeline there, it really has a direct effect, not on the actual amount that there is in oil, but on how we all feel about it, apparently, and, of course, about prices. And so what we saw today was U.S. crude futures for CLC1 jumped as high as $106.95 a barrel. It's the highest level since September of 2008. And that's as Gaddafi's counteroffensive against the rebels deepened concerns, this is according to Reuters, that Africa's largest holder of oil reserves is heading for civil war. So the prices are still going up, and it's a lot of unrest, and it's making things a little bit crazy down here. Meanwhile, gold went up. I can't believe how high gold has gone. Today it hit a record high of $1,444.40. It's almost like one with six fours after it. I mean, just really incredible. Silver rose as high as $36 an ounce, 52 cents. So what do we see on the other side? We're seeing the Dow slip. A whole bunch of reasons for that. We saw also in other economic news, risk premium on Greece, Portuguese, and Spanish debt rose. Moody's cut Greece's credit rating by three notches. So all of this is having an effect. It's making everybody worry. And, of course, it's going to make us pay more at the pump. Doesn't mean that there's less oil out there. It just means that everybody's afraid that we're not going to get to the oil that is there. And, of course, we're going to all pay for it at the pump. And what I'm worried about or thinking about is everybody out in Atlanta and how paying an extra 10, 20, 30 cents at the pump per gallon is going to affect your daily budgets or your weekly budgets or your monthly budgets. I know there's some people it's not going to have much of an effect, but there are a lot of people who are counting every single nickel these days. The recovery hasn't hit them yet, and so they are worried exactly about how they're going to make those payments on the credit cards and how they're going to pay for an extra, you know, $20 of gas each week. Those are the kinds of folks we want to hear from you. 404-872-0750. I think we'll go to the phone. Sam joins us on the line from Fayetteville. Hey, Sam. Welcome to the program.
Oh, thanks, Elise.
What's on your mind today?
Well, my wife and I are going to try to get our daughter out of what we consider to be a bad deal on a used car.
Okay.
She bought an 04 Pontiac Grand Am GT, and she had filed bankruptcy a few years ago. We didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
And so she had to pay almost double the rate for the car, over $11,000.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's the price of the car, but not the... What was the interest rate she ended up paying?
23.
Wow, 23%. Might have been cheaper to charge it on a credit card.
Well, she doesn't really have any credit since she filed bankruptcy.
Of course.
So we didn't know about this until late. So we've decided to help get her out of the car. And we're trying to figure out what is the best way of approaching the car lot, a used car lot that carries their own paper. And we don't want to pay, you know, $11,000. A car is only worth $6,000, according to Edmund.com.
Mm-hmm. Does she still need transportation?
Yeah, and we had always loaned her our third vehicle for short periods of time, and we can let her have it again.
Mm-hmm.
We have a old Toyota Camry that we could let her drive. But we would also help her to get into a better car.
Okay. So really what you're talking about is if you can sell the car for $6,000, you're just going to give her $5,000 to pay off the debt?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we're willing to go that way.
The best way to do that,
yeah,
I think, is to go to a place like CarMax.
Yeah, we went to CarMax.
And what did they say?
They said $3,500.
Wow.
For the car.
Okay.
So
they're usually pretty accurate. So what's the discrepancy? What did they see in the car that you didn't see from Edmunds?
I don't know. My daughter actually took it to CarMax,
mm-hmm.
so I'm not sure if there was a problem that they saw. But
all right, I think you... Okay, so Sam, I'm saying that I don't know how old your daughter is, but...
45.
Okay. She should obviously know better, but she doesn't. So if you help her, I think you can't, like, let her do half of it and you do half of it.
Uh-huh.
I don't think that's going to work well.
Okay.
Because then you might as well just pay off the loan for $11,000 and have her pay you back at 6%.
Is there any chance that the car dealer would take a lesser amount?
No.
No.
I can't imagine why they would. She signed papers. She owes them the money at 23%. The very best thing, if you want to teach her a lesson, and I'm not sure you do or you don't, but if you wanted to teach her a lesson, you pay off the loan and you charge her 5, 6, 7%, and you step up the payment so that in 2 years it's gone. Or at least in a year or two, she's down to where it's $6,000 or $5,000 where you can actually sell it and break even.
Yeah.
And that's the lesson I think you want to teach her. And then by that time, her credit will have started to recover. Because right now, she probably can't get a loan anywhere for any reasonable sort of money.
No, she can't.
So then you have to decide what you want to do. But if you sort of assign her tasks and it doesn't come back the right way, I'm not quite sure how that helps you either save time, save money, or teach her a lesson.
Well, we're not after teaching her a lesson. We're
okay.
just trying to get her out of this hole.
Then that's the best. There are two things you can do. You can sell the car for $3,500 to CarMax, or you can try to get another grand. My experience with CarMax, and I've sold at least one and maybe two cars to them, with them, is that I haven't found that I get lots more money doing it privately. But you can try to do it privately. It becomes fraught with fraud and other kinds of things. You have to be very careful.
Yes.
So you can get $3,500 for the car from CarMax and pay off the rest of her loan, which, you know, runs about $7,500. And then you're going to give her this third car, and then that's one way to do it. And then the other way is to just pay off her loan and have her pay you back.
vehicles. What if, would the dealer consider taking the car back in cash?
No. You mean giving you 11 grand back for it?
No, no. I mean giving them the car back and then giving them maybe a couple of $1,000 cash.
To wipe out the $11,000 loan?
Right.
No. They won't do it because it sounds to me like they probably made her pay more than the car was worth. She didn't do her homework, so they're now owed $11,000. Why would they settle for $7,000? Unless you were saying to them, we're going to bring fraud charges against you.
I see.
And you bring some sort of legal, you're bringing some legal heft to the table. I don't know why they would do it. You can always go and ask.
Sure.
But I wouldn't send your daughter to ask.
No, I'm going to go.
But that's, yes, you can always ask. I don't see any reason why, but I would expect them to say no. No deal. Pay us the $11,000.
Okay. Thank you very much, Elise.
I'm sorry, Sam.
Appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. 17 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. Lee joins us on the line. Lee, welcome to the program. Lee, you with us?
Yes.
Hi there. Welcome to the Clark Howard Show, Lee.
Thank you. I can barely hear you.
I'm so sorry about that. Can you hear us better now?
I don't know, but that's all right. Go ahead.
You ask your question, and I'll give you an answer. How's that?
Fine. I've never heard anybody address this one, but I have what I consider a fairly hefty and funded 401k. Now, I'm not 70 yet, but I will be shortly. And at 70 and a half, understand you have to start withdrawing from it.
Yes.
And my question primarily is, how's the best way to handle it? When I die, there should be a good bit of money in there. How is that handled?
Well, when you have a 401k, what you can do is when you set up the 401k, you designate a beneficiary and a person who sort of, if the beneficiary is gone or dead, doesn't want it, then somebody else to inherit it. And you can set that up inside the 401k. Are you still working, or is it now an IRA?
It's now an IRA.
Okay, so you've rolled it out of the 401k. It's now an IRA. When you set up the IRA, did they give you a beneficiary sheet?
Yes.
And did you put down who you wanted?
Yes.
Is it that still who you want to have inherit it?
Yes.
Okay, so when you die, what will end up happening is whoever is the executor of the estate will inform your heirs that they've inherited your IRA, and then they'll have to roll that IRA into an inherited IRA, which has certain withdrawal requirements, and then they'll have to pay the tax on that money.
Okay.
Do you understand that?
What part I can hear from you, yes.
Okay. I'm so sorry that this isn't, on your end, that it's not boosting up. But what I would do is, if you want more specific information, Lee, you should contact the company where the IRA is handled. So maybe it's Fidelity, or maybe it's Vanguard, Charles Schwab, Merrill Lynch, wherever you have it. Go there and ask them. You can call the investor services, or they have an IRA hotline. Most of the big investment companies have an IRA hotline. You can call them and ask them questions about it. They can pull up your beneficiary sheet. They can send you instructions for, let's say, your executor, so the executor knows exactly how to inform the heirs what they have to do. There are very specific requirements about rolling it into the inherited IRA, and that's how it gets taken care of. It's actually, that's pretty easy. It's not a hard question. Thank you so much for your call. 20 minutes past the hour on the Clark Howard Show. I'm Elise Kling, sitting in while Clark is eating gelato over in Italy this week. Stay tuned for more on News Talk WSB.
This is Clark. I'm not here today, but you're still getting money-saving info from money expert and author Elise Glink on News Talk WSB.
Six minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Glink, sitting in for Clark today, tomorrow, and Wednesday. He's off in Italy, enjoying a little quiet time, well-deserved. Our number, 404-872-0750, online, thinkglink.com. Steve joins us on the line. Hey, Steve, what's going on today?
Hey, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. Got a question?
Yes, ma'am. I've had a credit card for a long time, and...
What's a long time?
Well, I mean... I've just had one credit. I've had several credit cards, closed a lot of them out, where I've just had the one credit card now for several years.
Okay.
And got a good credit score and just recently applied for one of the cash back credit cards.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got a little bit higher interest rate than what I'm paying now, but I try to pay off my monthly, I try to pay the balance off at the end of every month. And
great.
Had the balance transferred from the one card, or the had the credit limit transferred from the one card that I was using to the cash back card and increase that credit limit. And what I was trying to find out is, should I keep, is it okay to close the old credit card out without affecting my credit a whole lot, or and just use the other credit card? Is that okay, or is it going to,
I wouldn't do that. I would not do that. You have one credit card. You've had it for several years. If you cut that credit card, then all the benefit that those years of having that credit card goes away. So if you don't have any balance on that credit card, but you use it once or twice a year, pay it off right away, and it doesn't cost you anything to carry it year after year, keep
right.
it. Keep it. It's only helping you. It's only okay. helping you. And as for, you know, paying off your balance, I would get it paid off just as quickly as you can, and then I would endeavor not to run a balance anymore. And then it doesn't matter. I had somebody call my show yesterday morning, because, you know, I do the show on Sunday, and he said, you know, my new credit card, it just came in, and it's got a 23% interest that it carries. And I said, really, how much of a balance do you have? And he said, none. And I said, then why do you care? It could be 75% interest. But if you don't carry a balance, you're never going to pay that. And so that's kind of how I feel about credit cards. Unless you carry a balance, that's not important to me. What is important is that you get the right affiliations, you get cash for, you know, cash back is fantastic, and that you keep the cards that you have for a really long time, because that's how you show the credit reporting bureaus and really your future creditors that you know how to manage your money. And that's what it's all about. So I would keep it, Steve. Got nothing to lose. 404-872-0750. I'm Elise Kling, sitting in for Clark. We'll be right back with more. So stay tuned to News Talk WSB.
Clark Howard on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Minutes past the hour on the Clark Howard Show. I'm Elise Blink, sitting in for Clark for the next few days. He's off in Italy enjoying a little R&R. And glad I could be with you today. 404-872-0750 is our number here at the station. We are online all the time. ThinkGlink.com, ThinkGlink.com. You might want to also check out my blog on the Equifax personal finance blog, Equifax.com/blog, MoneyWatch.com, and our very new exciting project, RealtyJoin, which is a social network and marketplace for the entire real estate industry. Buyers, sellers, painters, plumbers. There's a furniture maker, a custom furniture maker, I think he's from Georgia, who signed up today. It's a national site. It is really cool. We've got appraisers and inspectors and lots of real estate agents. It's the place that people in the industry, in the whole industry, can talk to each other. And it is one of my little pet projects. I am the chief content strategist for the site, and I blog there as well. Check it out at realtyjoin.com. So one of the things I've been doing is hanging out at this year's International Home and Houseware Show, where Pantone just announced a few hours ago what the new palettes were going to be, the color palettes were going to be for the year. And they have all kinds of weird names, like Nonchalance is the name of a color palette, or Indigo Palace or something, I don't know. It's all about the packaging, right? But I walked the halls there yesterday at McCormick Center in Chicago, and it was a really interesting show because a couple of trends really popped right out at me, and we're going to be blogging more about this at thinklink.com a little later on today. But the idea, part of the House International Home and Houseware Show was also the Travel Goods Show. It was right next to it. So we walked in there, and I thought to myself, if you have a black bag, and when they start off the carousel and you keep looking for the black bag and everybody has a black bag, this is going to go away, because what I saw at this year's Travel Goods Show, part of this thing yesterday, color, texture, pattern, design. That's what I saw. Color, texture, pattern, design. No need to have a black case anymore, or even just a solid red one or a solid green one. We took some images that were absolutely astonishing. There's an Italian company that makes these great hard cases. And instead of putting something on the outside of the case, it's kind of like there's a translucent cover. And there were, it looked like, it was awesome. It looked like somebody had done graffiti all over the back, but really like good graffiti. And they took a shot of that with the marks and the designs and the bubbles, and they used that on one of the cases. They had really gorgeous textured cases. They had polka dot cases. There were gorgeous colors of the rainbow. Disney, there's a line of Disney-themed for your kids. Disney-themed bags, because kids like to wheel wheelie bags, and you as a parent like to have them wheel whatever you can. They were lit up. I don't know how they did this. They had, we'll have to put up the video like really soon so you could see this, but it was awesome. So you basically press a button and lights light up on the design and the bag in Disney characters and full Disney colors. It's fantastic. And so we walked around and you could see that it isn't just the bags. Then you went into the Home and Houseware show and you realize that it's all about color right now. That the whole idea of sleek and white and steel has gone by the wayside. There's bamboo everywhere. So you've got these wonderful woods and patterns that are going to be popping up everywhere. Bamboo furniture, bamboo flooring, bamboo wall covers, bamboo plates. We saw all kinds of really gorgeous bamboo cutting boards, of course, but the different kinds of implements that we're seeing with bamboo, which grows, we got three answers to this. How fast does bamboo grow? Somebody said 6 inches a day. Somebody said 18 inches a day. Somebody said 3 feet a day. Maybe that's the different seasons. I don't know. Anyway, it was really interesting to kind of see these trends. So there's definitely a bamboo trend and a natural trend. There's definitely a color trend. Color, hot color everywhere, from the sippy cup that you take, you know, the hot cup that you take in the car on your way to work. It's just not going to be silver anymore. It's going to be like hot purple, or it's going to be neon blue. Really, all the way to the plates that you use, to the silverware. There was a lovely set of knives. I think it was in the KitchenAid. It's ceramic blades, which are great because they don't rust and they really don't need to be sharpened ever. Ceramic blades, and then the handles, they had green handles, blue, black, purple, red. Fantastic. So when you're out there looking around for housewares later this year and into next year, look for color, look for bamboo, color, pattern, and texture for the cases. It's all about bringing the world to life. So 40 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. Let's go back to the phones. Ryan joins us on the line from Stone Mountain. Hey, Ryan.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm great. What's on your mind today?
I got a question about my credit card.
Okay.
I've had my card since back in 2005. It started out as a secured account. I gave them, you know, $500, and they gave me a secured account.
Yep.
Or I think I said about $1,000. And then over through the years, I've gone and acquired more credit through them, going up to about $20,000, which I've just recently stopped paying last month. And I'm curious to know, how much longer do I need to wait until I can go and actually do some kind of a settlement with them?
Well, the real question, I mean, you could go at any time, but when they're really going to be open to it is somewhere between 4 and 5 months.
Okay.
Of you stopping paying.
Yeah, because, you know, we're having trouble paying for the card. You know, we've used it through the years, you know, paying for, you know, utilities, groceries, anything like that.
And you've just sort of built up unnecessary expenses. Are you or your wife out of work?
Yes.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Well, you can, you know, you can literally declare bankruptcy and never have to pay any of it back.
Right.
Or most of it back. Or in about 5 months, you can go to them and they'll probably settle with you for a little less than 50 cents on the dollar.
Right.
Do you have $10,000 in cash?
No, I don't.
So you really should take a look at kind of the bigger picture for yourself,
mm-hmm.
and figure out if you're at a point where you really need to think about bankruptcy.
We've thought about it, but on the other hand, I do know that by the time you go and you pay for an attorney,
mm-hmm.
I could be saving that money each month and try to go and use that to maybe pay the full amount. When they do come back with some kind of like a settlement for me,
you know, Ryan, a bankruptcy attorney isn't going to cost you $10,000.
Oh, really?
Or $5,000?
I wouldn't even know.
It might be between $800 and $1,200 to do the filing.
Okay. Something I probably need to look into.
Why don't you know what I'd really like you to do? Why don't you go to Consumer Credit Counseling Services of Greater Atlanta? They're now called Credibility.
Okay.
Go online. Before you could file for bankruptcy anyway, you'd have to go there and take a bankruptcy class and get a certificate.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you call them and talk to them? Go make an appointment, talk to them over the phone, do some web work, and start to figure out what your real options are going to be. Because, you know, I'm seeing a small piece of your picture,
mm-hmm.
but I'm guessing there's more. And if you've got a house...
I was also worried that, you know, when I do go get a job, I don't know if they're going to go and they're going to garnish wages. I don't know if they're going to... You know, I've got great... You know, this is the first time I've ever been late since I've even had the card.
Right.
So I didn't know if, you know, when I do go to get a job... You know, am I going to get the
They might.
Garnished?
Well, I don't know. They might. I mean, they're going to want their money back.
Right.
But I think you need to get some more professional help. You need to take a look at the bigger picture. How's your job hunt going, which is really the most important part of this?
It's far and few between.
Wow.
Interviews here and there.
I'm so sorry. Well, I think you should call and make an appointment and see what you can get out of that in terms of getting a little direction and a little, you know, future look. But I know that you can file bankruptcy yourself. I don't know if I would do that, though. And I think if you can find an attorney to help you for $1,000 or less, that might be a very good way to start. You just have to see where you are and where you're going and understand what the consequences are.
Well, I appreciate your help. Thanks for your time.
Oh, you're welcome, Ryan. Good luck. 44 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. William joins us on the line. Hi, William.
Hey, how are you today?
I'm good, thanks. What's on your mind today?
Well, it's kind of a credit card theme here. Me and my wife have gotten into a little bit of jam with some credit card debt, and two cards in particular are already at the law firm status.
Okay. You mean in the negotiation?
Well,
they're chasing you like a...
Yeah, they're sending letters, et cetera.
Collection. Okay.
Yeah. And ironically, they're both for a little over $4,000, and they're both at the same law firm at the same time. So my question is... Is it ever feasible or a right move to pull some money or borrow it out of your 401k to make these things go away?
It can be. How old are you?
Me, I'm 42.
Okay. And how much money do you have in your 401k?
Probably about 50.
50,000?
I'm thinking more of my wife. She's 5 years younger than I am.
Mm-hmm.
So.
How much does she have in her 401k?
About 36.
Okay. So, are both of you working? Is that the situation,
yes.
Or somebody's not working?
Yes, no, we're both working. There's just, you know, not a lot of extra money at this point.
Okay. So, it can be an okay move to just get them off your back. If you filed for bankruptcy, this money, this retirement money is protected, but it will hurt your credit. And if you ever looking for new jobs and your credit history gets pulled, that's not so good to have on your credit history if you can avoid it. How are you doing with the rest of money? Like, are you underwater with your mortgage as well?
Yeah, a little bit.
Not bad?
Not bad.
You know, if you want to take it, so what happens is you need $8,000 to pay these off, right? And get them off your back.
Correct.
And you need, to do that, you're going to end up paying a little bit in tax, but not much. It's not too much. Probably another $2,000. For tax. And so I think what I would do is if you paid off the $8,000 and then they agree, if you pay it off in full, they agree to wipe it off your credit as much as they possibly can.
Right.
I think then can you save up the $2,000 that you're going to need for next April 15th, 2012 to pay the taxes on that money?
Right. Absolutely.
Okay. So then I think that you can do that and you're young enough that you'll be able to recover from it. But I don't know why. You could take it from your wife's. You could take it from yours. You could take, you know, five and five. It isn't really going to matter.
Should I wait a little bit and try to negotiate at what you said earlier?
No.
Just, dollar?
No, because you're destroying your credit further and further. I mean, you can. You can call them up at the lawyers and say, look, I owe you $4,000 and I owe you $4,000 in this other bill that you guys are collecting. Just try to get one person to talk to you and say to them, look, I can maybe come up with six total, and can we call it a, you know, complete write off the rest? You're going to accept this as payment in full. I'm never going to hear from you guys again, and I want it in writing. You could certainly go and say that, and then they're going to either say yes or no, and then you're going to say, fine, I'm going to write you a check for the whole thing because I don't want to hear from you again. But here's what I want the letter to say.
because the end game, eventually they could get a judgment, and then
yeah, you don't want to pay off six and have them chase you for two for the rest of your life, really.
Right.
So it has to be settled in full.
Okay.
No questions that they're going to sell the rest of it, do anything to it. You're done. This is it. They're taking it. Everybody's moving on. And then you're good to go. But if they won't do that and they hold out for the eight, then I think it's not, $2,000 is not enough. It's not going to kill your retirement. Just do it, pay it off, bite the bullet, and just do what you can to get ready for the tax hit in the following year. And it'll probably be about $2,000 depending on where you are and how much you earn next year.
Okay, very good.
All right?
Thank you.
Good luck. I hope it works out, William. It's 49 minutes past the hour. You know, folks, if you're going to do this and negotiate like William and Ryan are hoping to negotiate, it's so important to get everything in writing. You just want to make sure that you don't get slammed on the other side and suddenly you've negotiated for 40 cents on the dollar and you're getting hit with something bigger. Plus, think about this. If you owe them $10,000 and you only pay $5,000, the IRS may look at that $5,000 as a gift, and you could end up paying tax on that money as well. That's called phantom income. And the people who are getting hit with that right now in a huge and scary sort of way are real estate investors who are turning the properties back over. They get sold. They're way underwater. And there is no forgiveness for that phantom income on the other side. And so real estate investors are getting hit at the next tax season with huge tax bills for these properties. So think about it all the way. It's often just not worth it. You're better off just, if you can, in this case, like with William, it's an extra $2,000. I know that seems like a huge amount of money now, but in the long run, just paying it off in full could be a lot better for you. 50 minutes past the hour on the Clark Howard Show. I'm Elise Glink. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more on News Talk WSB.
This is Clark. I'm not here today, but you're still getting money-saving info from money expert and author Elise Glink on News Talk WSB.
55 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Glink. Thanks for listening to the Clark Howard Show. Our number, 404-872-0750. Let's go back to the phones. It is like a credit card day. Ron joins us on the line. Hey, Ron, what's your credit card question? Ron, you with us? No, I guess not. Ron is not with us. Okay, so we're not going to... See, I cursed myself. We thought we were going to have another credit card call, and we didn't. All right, let's try Winston. Winston, you with us?
Yes, I'm with you.
How, Winston? What's going on?
I got a letter from my mortgage company concerning my PMI.
Uh-huh.
And they said it may be canceled if all the following conditions are met. Then they said at the bottom, if you wish to pursue the cancellation, you may submit a written request and a valuation fee of $190.
Yeah. How long have you had this loan?
4 years.
4 years. Interesting. And has the property prices gone up since you bought this house?
No, it's not.
Okay. And
the subdivision is not built out either.
Okay.
They already left. You know, a lot of empty lots and everything all around me.
Okay. So it's likely that your property hasn't gone up in value. And how much equity did you have in the property to begin with?
That much I didn't really know at the moment, at the time.
Did you put down like 5%?
Yeah, either 5% or 10%.
Okay. So here's what I think is going on, which is actually sort of a clever ploy, and I hadn't seen this before. They're looking to just bolster up their revenue with $195 from all kinds of people. They probably are sending out these letters, and I'm sure they're beautifully written, and they seem to say, hey, you could get rid of all this expensive PMI. Just pay us $195 for a check of an appraisal. And what the appraisal is going to find is that your property's gone down in value, actually, instead of up. And you're probably underwater, or at least your equity's disappeared. And then they're going to come back and say, oh, thank you for paying this, but unfortunately you have no equity. So you'll have lost your $195 for no reason. And the reason they're sending it to you now is because technically they cannot, under Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, they can't release you from PMI until you pay down the loan to the 20% mark with cash. You'd have to give them a big check, or if the property price has gone up enough to give you that level of equity. But you and I know it hasn't, and they should know, but what they're doing is hoping that you're going to be so excited about the possibility that you're going to just pay them $195 anyway. I don't think you should pay the money, Winston. If you've got an extra $195, I would so much rather see you actually use it to pay down the mortgage faster than line the pockets of this lender that's just trying to collect some cash. Don't do it. 404-872-0750 here on the Clark Howard Show. It is 58 minutes past the hour. We're going to do all the news, the economic news, when we come back after news, weather, and traffic here on News Talk WSB.
This is Clark Howard on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
It's past the hour, News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Klink. Thanks for joining us here on the Clark Howard Show. It is March 7th, and we're so glad to be with you. I'm here through Wednesday. Clark's on vacation, having a little gelato and pasta over in Italy. We are online all the time. ThinkGlink.com, ThinkGlink.com. That's my website. We do a update at the end of the show with some show notes, and we'll be able to get that up by the end of the show today. And you'll be able to click through and see a lot of the sort of the primary sources for the stories we've talked about and get more information on all of them. You should also sign up for the free weekly newsletter, which is just terrific. Your key to all of the content that we produce for the ThinkLink community, whether it's Money Watch, the Equifax personal finance blog at equifax.com/blog, our new Realty Join blog. There's all kinds of wonderful information available to you for free. Clark's favorite word, F-R-E-E, at the thinklink.com community. And we hope you'll join in, participate, share your knowledge that you gain, and hang out with us. It's a lot of fun. Our number, 404-872-0750. I wanted to take a quick look at where we are in the market right now. At the moment, the Dow is down almost 1%, down about 106 points. NASDAQ down about 53. S&P 500 is down. NASDAQ's down almost 2% here. And what we're seeing mostly is that continued hostilities in Libya are pushing up the price of oil. Oil was nearly $107 a barrel in early trading. It's the highest it's been in 2.5 years. It's certainly, excuse me, scaring the pants off of just about everybody on Wall Street. And we're seeing the average price of a gallon of gas rise to nearly $4 in California today, average overall over the U.S., $3.50 a gallon, which is pretty high. And I think it's causing some nervousness for consumers as well. The last time we saw oil spike like this, it was a couple of summers ago, and as you may remember, oil spiked to nearly $150 a barrel, which was just absolutely astonishing. And, of course, we were all feeling the pain of that at the pump, where we were paying well over $4 a gallon. Meanwhile, in addition to oil hitting a new high for the last 2.5 years, we had gold hit a record high today. At one point, gold was trading at $1,443.40. I mean, ridiculous, an ounce. And silver rose to a 30-something year record high, $36.50 an ounce as well. We saw in other news, as if the price of oil going out of sight isn't enough, Moody's has been active. They downgraded Greece's credit rating by 3 notches on Monday, and that was a big problem. And that's really going to cause, I think, some fallout with what's going on with the 10-year notes and some other treasuries. So Treasury is trying to sell $30 billion or $32 billion in new 3-year notes tomorrow. And they're going to try and sell another $21 billion and $13 billion in reopenings of the 10-year notes and the 30-year bonds Wednesday and Thursday. And it'll be interesting to see what happens. And there was a wide feeling that the rally last week looked good, that the stock market was up 300 points. This week, not so much. So we're watching quite a bit of fluctuation, I would say, maybe a little turn in how people are feeling out there, which is sort of interesting. You know, what did we see last week? I think we saw some good news in jobs for the first time in a long time, or at least seemed like it was good. We went under 9% for the official unemployment rate. That doesn't solve the real problem. There are a lot of people who are just now no longer being counted in the unemployment numbers. If you look at the true numbers, It's not 13 million people who are unemployed. It's really more like 20, 22 million people who are unemployed. That's a big chunk of people in this country. So we're going to have to still solve quite a few problems to get the economy back up and running, I think. And certainly all of this trickles down to the housing market. We saw pending sales were down last month nationally, but we heard on my show yesterday that actually in Georgia, in Atlanta particularly, pending sales went up a little bit in February and looked a little bit better, but prices are down. So all of this stuff is tied together. It all comes back, in my mind, to jobs and the economy, and we're not out of the woods yet. 404-872-0750. Let's go to the phones. Lisa joins us on the line. Hi, Lisa. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Elise. How are you?
I'm all right. Thanks. What's on your mind?
My husband and I have done seller financing for a home that we own.
Uh-huh.
And we have been getting some inquiries regarding companies that want to buy our note.
Okay.
And we don't know anything about how that operates.
Okay. Let me start at the beginning. When you sold your house, whose note did you hold, and how much of the house do you have?
We own the house.
Okay.
And we sold it to a person, a private individual, but we are holding the mortgage. The house was priced at $400,000.
Yeah.
And they put down $16,000, and so we're holding a note for $386,000, and they're paying us each month.
They only put down $16,000.
Uh-huh.
4%.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And did you run a credit check on them and all the rest?
We did.
Okay, and you felt good about that.
They also had rented the house a year before we decided to do the on the financing.
Okay, so you feel like you know them a little bit, which is fine. And what's the interest rate on the note?
5.5%.
Okay, so why would you want to sell this?
We really would just like to get out of the note holding business.
Yeah, really.
Yeah.
It's very risky.
Yeah, I know.
Okay, so here's how I think it works most times. So what will happen is somebody will buy the note, and they will give you less than the face value for that
mm-hmm.
note.
Uh-huh.
Right? So if you've got a note for $400,000, they might come back and give you $300,000 cash for it.
Uh-huh.
Or $350,000 cash.
Uh-huh.
And then they'll either make it or they'll sell that note to somebody else, and they make uh-huh. the spread on it.
Oh, okay.
Right?
Okay. Uh-huh.
Or they give you, so that's pretty much how it works. So if you feel like taking a big haircut, but you're out of the business, you got a chunk of cash, but you might have well just lowered the price of the house at that point and sold it outright.
Yeah, that would be another option.
Let me ask you a question. Do the people who own the house now, would they qualify for a mortgage?
What's interesting is that they have now moved out and they are renting the house.
Oh.
Is that a...
Why are they renting why are they renting the house?
Well, because they still hold the note, and they found another house that they bought.
Okay. Okay, so this is getting dangerous, right?
Okay.
Because what if their renter leaves, and they stop paying on the note? What are you going to do, take back the house?
Yeah, I guess
okay.
it would.
Mm-hmm. So it is risky, what you've done.
Okay.
And one thing you might have done when you drew up the note was to require them to stay in the house as a primary residence.
Yeah.
Or refinance.
Right.
They're not going to be able to qualify to refinance that property right now.
Okay.
Are they getting enough money from the renter to pay all the bills?
Yeah. Yeah, they are.
You sure? Including the mortgage, taxes, upkeep, all the rest?
I think they are. I'm not 100% sure.
The reason you'd want to know is because it tells you how much risk it actually is, like how much risk there is there, because if it costs them $2,000, and I'm just making up these numbers, but if it costs them, let's say, $2,000 a month to carry the house, and they're only getting in $1,500,
right?
There's only a limited amount of time they're going to carry that.
Okay.
So you should talk to them about, and did you take a 30-year note, or did you do a 5-year? What'd you do for them?
We did a 5-year.
Okay, and have you talked to them about how they're going to convert that note at 5 years?
No, we haven't yet, but we will this week.
Okay. I think this is a situation where you want to stay on top of it.
Well, you know, we're thinking that the worst case scenario is that we take the house back and then put it on the market and just sell it for a lower price than it, you know, then just sell it for whatever we can get.
Yeah, I would talk to the company that's interested in maybe buying your note,
right,
and ask them how much they're willing to pay, because it would be interesting to just hear their answer.
Okay.
And then you know what you're working with. If they're willing to offer you $250,
no.
What you might as well do is tell the owners of the house to go refinance, and you'll give them $50,000 off, and you're still ahead.
Okay.
Right? Or right?
You mean $350?
No, you give them, right, they would refinance for $350, you'd give them a $50,000 break to do it and get off, right? You're better off doing that than selling your loan for $250 to somebody else.
Oh, I understand what you're saying. Okay.
So now you know what you're really talking about.
Yeah, right.
And what you really want to do is get the $400,000 back, and hopefully you will.
Okay.
I don't know that you will.
Okay.
But at least you don't have another mortgage to pay off with it.
Exactly, right. Okay. All righty. Well, you know, I think we made a bad decision, but we appreciate the information.
Lisa, I don't know. I wouldn't beat yourself up yet, right? This looks like not the best move that you've made, but it's not by far the worst. And I would find a real estate attorney, because if you're going to either sell this note or you're going to get these owners to refinance and you're going to give them a break, you're going to need some proper paperwork.
Right.
And I'd like to see you hire a real estate attorney to guide you through it this time, okay?
No, we did that before.
Okay, good.
We actually had a real estate attorney who closed it and everything. So we didn't try to do it on our own.
Good. I'm so glad to hear that, because then at least I know you've got some protections. But
yeah,
it may still work out pretty well. I mean, if you take a little bit of a haircut, honestly, if you had to sell it in the market, you would have had to pay a commission anyway.
Right.
And with the transfer taxes and the commission and whatever else, it might have been $30,000-$40,000. So if you take a $30,000-$40,000 haircut now, it's no more than you would have paid before. Plus, you might have listed your home at $400,000 but only sold it for $220,000. You never know.
Exactly.
So I don't think this is the worst decision.
Yeah.
It was a pretty good decision at the time.
Yeah.
The idea is to now get out of it, and it's still a pretty good decision.
Yeah, and we've also had 2 years of collecting payments.
Awesome.
So, you know, we're...
Which has probably helped your cash flow, too, because it's a lot more
absolutely
than you'd get in the bank.
Absolutely. And we were able to buy a house in this market for half of what it originally sold for. So
also good.
Yeah,
so I don't think this was the worst decision. I don't want you to say that. It could end up being the best decision of your life. We just don't know yet.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you're making me feel a little better now.
Good. I don't want to make you feel bad. I want you to understand that. I just like to lay it out for everybody so they get the full picture.
Right. Okay. Well, listen, thanks a lot.
You're welcome. Let me know how it goes. It's 19 minutes past the hour on the Clark Howard Show. I don't want Lisa to feel bad. I want Lisa to understand that it could be the best decision she and her husband ever made, because they bought a house for half price. They've got $400,000 in cash. Even if they only get, if they put that money in the stock market 2 years ago, they might have lost half of it. And so instead of $400,000, it might have been $200,000. They'd be getting 5.5% instead of 1% on their money. I mean, there are lots of, so far it's worked out pretty well. You just want to make sure that something like this ends as well as it began, and then she really will be the winner. 404-872-0750. It is 20 minutes past the hour on the Clark Howard Show. I'm Elise Glink. Stay tuned. We'll be back with more on News Talk WSB.
This is Clark. I'm not here today, but you're still getting money-saving info from money expert and author Elise Glink on News Talk WSB.
25 minutes past the hour in the Clark Howard Show. So glad you could join us this week on News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Glink sitting in. Be here in the next few days as Clark takes a few days off. Danny joins us on the line now from Powder Springs. Hey, Danny.
Hi, Elise.
What's going on?
Well, I have PMI, private mortgage insurance,
mm-hmm,
because I did not put 20% down on my home.
Yep.
But what is PMI? What will it do for me?
I am so glad that you asked. Well, what private mortgage insurance does for you is it allows you to actually buy a house without having 20% down.
Okay.
Before PMI was invented, you had to have 20% down or you had to get an FHA loan. And if you didn't have an FHA, couldn't qualify, or you didn't go with an FHA, you would not be able to get a mortgage. And so that's all, the only thing PMI really does for you is it allows you to buy that loan, get the loan and buy the house. What it does for the lender is it insures the top 20% of the mortgage. So what you get is a loan that looks like an 80% first mortgage to them, sort of behind the scenes. And that's what they get. They get the assurance that if you put down 3% or 4% or 5% and you end up going into default, they're covered up to 20% for that loss.
Oh, so
if the property price goes down in value, shockingly, that's what's been happening, and you default, they're going to be covered.
Well, I am now in a forbearance plan trying to do a short sale. Is the PMI going to affect me in any way here?
PMI won't, well, I don't know how to answer that. I can tell you it shouldn't affect it. The lender, you know, should go through the short sale. But what's been happening with PMI is that the companies have lost billions and billions of dollars. And so what they've been doing is they've been going back after some of the borrowers to be reimbursed for that top 20%. And so, is that going to happen to you? I don't know. It's not happening very often and not in a lot of cases, but I have heard one or two people who have gotten collection letters for that money. It shouldn't affect you, but I don't know. There's a lot of weird stuff going on right now in the market.
I understand. Well, thank you very much for answering my question.
Well, you're so very welcome, Danny. Appreciate the call. Have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Thank you. 28 minutes past the hour on the Clark Howard Show, our number 404-872-0750. When we come back, I think we're going to do some tips on how to save money at the grocery store. I don't know. I can tell you to shop around for gas. I can tell you to drive less and keep your tires pumped up. That might take a little bit of the edge off of higher gas prices. But if I can help you save 20, 30, or 40 bucks a week at the grocery store, it's going to more than make up for it. So I think we'll do that next. It is 28 minutes past the hour on the Clark Howard Show. I'm Elise Gling. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more on News Talk WSB.
Clark Howard on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Clark Howard Show. It is 36 minutes past the hour this March 7th. I'm Elise Glink, sitting in for Clark today. Don't forget to check out my website, thinkglink.com, or go to the Equifax personal finance blog, equifax.com/blog. You'll hear from the real credit experts, and then I write about real estate. It's kind of a 2-for-1 package, actually a 4 or 5-for-1 package, because we've got a lot of other experts, personal finance experts up there. We also have a brand new site that my company has been involved in launching called Realty Join. Realty Join is the place to social network and marketplace for the entire real estate industry, buyers, sellers, rehabbers, I don't know, stagers, agents, brokers, investors, painters, I don't know. The list goes on and on. There's a huge universe of users for this site. And already people are up there and networking and sending each other business, which is kind of cool. And it's free to join. My favorite word after out of them all, free, F-R-E-E. One of the things I wish was free was actually food prices, because food prices have just kind of gone out of sight. And what you're seeing from the United Nations is that global food prices hit a record high in February due to upward spiraling gas prices and stockpiling by importers. Not so good. And you're seeing it hit the volatile cereal markets, where wheat, corn, sugar, and edible oils have seen the sharpest price increases in the last 6 months, followed by a relatively smaller increase in rice. But remember, last year, people were like limiting the number of bags of rice you could buy. So we're seeing that produce is skyrocketing, and prices are expected to rise by roughly a quarter to a third in the next year. So it's going up. And you know, when people are hungry, this is sort of a little bit about my general worldview. When people are hungry, they get angry. I can't blame them. I get a little grumpy myself when I haven't had lunch. But for me, it's just missing one meal occasionally. If I happen to be too busy or out working and I just don't get to it. But there are people every day in this country, around the world, who go to bed hungry. It's really not, when you mix that with volatile politics and really oppressive regimes, it's just a disaster waiting to happen. And as we see more and more public unrest in other parts of the world, and skyrocketing food prices, that's a lot of hungry people that could be could be hungrier. In the meantime, what do you do if you're here in America? I thought that this was a really good list of 10 things that you can think about doing. I don't know that they're absolutely, going to break the bank in terms of ideas, but I think they're good, solid ideas, and they're from Andrea Walrich. She's a sort of a food expert, I would say. She's got a very good website. I'm putting it up and linking my blog to it because she does a lot of television segments about food and food pricing and how you can make sort of a smarter decision. And so her 10 ways to combat rising food prices include shopping at warehouse stores, because it's not that all the prices are better, but there are great deals to be had and you want to really see what, you're looking at. And I do a lot of shopping. My shopping habits have really changed, and I now do quite a lot of my shopping at Costco, because unless milk is really on sale, you're going to pay less at Costco at $1.99 a gallon than you are almost anywhere else. And you spend a lot of time and money driving around, going store to store to store. So if you know what you can get at Costco that's cheaper than almost anywhere else, and you can deal with the quantities either by sharing or by, buying every other week, that's going to make a big difference. Coupons are amazing because you can literally go online and find downloadable coupons almost anywhere. Cell phones now get coupons. People can get sent for them. There's a website called cellfire.com, which is a good source, she says, for grocery savings. You can get coupons that get printed out at the register. They're called Catalinas, and these are targeted towards the purchases you've made that day. So you might want to take a look at those and see if you can get your store to stack them for you. Dollar General, it's one of the hottest stocks out there in the last couple of years, but they really, check the expiration dates, but you can find great deals there, she says. You've got grocery store rewards cards. They allow you to download online coupons directly to your rewards card, and then if you use your reward card and swipe it at the cash station, like Safeway, it automatically takes it off. And sometimes it just takes it off anyway. I mean, even if, just because there's some other deal that you didn't even realize. Buying generic. We do a lot of generic buying these days. If you can skip the brand items, that's good. And discount gift cards are great. There's a website called Gift Card Granny for discount coupons from Walmart and Kmart that said food and produce. So that's good. Making a list. This is sort of, making a list, planning your meals, that kind of stuff. All really helpful so you don't go in hungry. Never go shopping when you're hungry. One-stop shopping. You go to Target or you go to Costco where you can get gas and you can get groceries at the same time. That's better than driving around store to store and finding parking. And then finally, avoid the out-of-season produce. Like, now is not a great time to get blueberries. Right, you would like to have some fresh blueberries, but at $7 a pint, you know that there's something wrong there. But, you have to understand, like, squash is cheaper in the fall, and apples are cheaper in the fall and winter, and better, too. I mean, they're okay now, but you really have to think about where food comes from, even if it's not coming from your neck of the woods, to get the very best savings, and it's all worthwhile. I'll put all of these up on my thinklink.com blog on the show notes today. You can check it out at thinklink.com. Click on the blog icon, and then we'll have a link to Andrea's website for you as well for some more tips. 42 minutes past the hour on the Clark Howard Show. Ben joins us on the line. Hi, Ben.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. What's going on today?
Well, I'm calling on behalf of my father. He is nearing retirement age. He doesn't have a whole lot of savings, and what he does have in savings, he has seen, in 2008, he saw 40% of it leave.
Wow, I'm so sorry.
And, but what we have kind of as a family contract, we've kind of gone in and bought a piece of land together. However, he is the only one on the note. He took out a home equity line of credit and bought a piece of land that we're going to try to kind of simplify our life and homestead on. But what he's wanting to know is that he's getting fearful of the market right now. And if he were to take another hit of 40% like he did, because just right now he's just back to where he was in 08.
Okay.
So if he takes a hit again of 40%, he's not going to be able to, you know, to do the things that he's wanting to do when he retires.
Can he work an extra year or two?
Well, this is the thing. This is the actual question. He's got the note, the home equity line of credit for the land that we're going to move on to. He's wanting to pull money out of his 401k now, pay that land out outright, and he's got his house that he's living in now, which holds a good bit of equity. If he were to able to sell his house, he would be able to pay off the note on the home he's living in, plus the home equity line, plus be able to drop a chunk of change on building on the raw land. What he's worried about is that he's figured it that he'll lose $28,000 pulling the money out of his 401k to taxes.
Yeah, I don't think he should do that. I don't think he should do that at all. I think what he should do is sell the house he's in if he can.
It's for sale right now.
Okay.
The other part of the question, and I think you've answered it, unless you've got another choice that we don't know about, is possibly lowering the price of the house up to that $28,000 mark in hopes of selling it quicker.
Well, I don't know, Ben, how long it's going to take to sell your dad's house, but mm-hmm. what I think is a really good idea is getting it sold. Have you already bought? He's already bought the new land.
Yeah.
Okay, so then what he should do is try and sell the house, and then he can go live somewhere else. He can rent while he's building the retirement, whatever it's going to be, compound.
Uh-huh.
Look, the retirement Kenny Bunkport.
Right.
You know, he can rent somewhere for 6 months or a year while that gets built. And then he's on the positive side because he's already paying. He's not double paying. While he's getting everything organized, he's kind of renting. He's got the cash because the house is sold, and he can build at his leisure. And I think it'll give him a little bit more comfort no matter what happens with the stock market. The other thing I would say is that, I don't know how old he is.
That's assuming that the house sells relatively soon.
Well, if it sells relatively soon, or whenever it sells, like, he shouldn't be building on the new place before he can sell on the old place.
Right. He just doesn't want to be. He owes $109,000. On the land, so he's wanting to, you know, have that the kind of taken off of his mind, off of his payroll or whatever.
Okay. Well, if I were starting this clock from the beginning, as opposed to where I'm jumping in, which is about, you know,
sure.
30 days too late, I think what I would have done is just not bought the next piece of land until he had sold the house. There's lots and lots of land for sale. And I don't know if there's something very special about the land you bought.
There is.
Okay.
Yeah.
So then this is an investment in his future. And I don't know how much he has in the 401k, but I'm not sure why you would want to pay. Is he over 59 and a half?
Yeah, he is 62.
I don't know why he would want to pay. I don't know why he'd want to pay the 28% if he doesn't have to.
Okay. Do you think that it's a prudent decision to try to lower the price of the house to sell?
Yeah, if it's not selling. Well, the question you have to determine is if it's not selling because there's nobody who wants to buy, or it's not selling because it's overpriced for what else is out there,
mm-hmm.
and or if it's not selling because it needs too much work because he's lived there for 40 years and he's never painted the front porch and nobody wants.
Quite the opposite. It's an immaculate house. He's a heck of a carpenter and a
carpenter. Awesome.
So,
okay.
So he's done a whole lot and has a tremendous amount of equity in the home because of it.
Great. So now the question is, can he just, does anybody want to buy it at the price he needs or he wants? Or if he lowers it, will there be more interest? Like, have people come by and said, I love this house, but I would only pay this and I don't want to insult him, then you know that your pricing is wrong. Or if nobody's interested at all in that house in that neighborhood at the moment, you just have to hang out and wait. But the other thing I would say is, you know, if he pushes off taking Social Security from 62 to maybe, what's his full retirement age, 66 or 65?
I'm assuming 65, but I could be wrong about that.
Let's just say it's 66. I can't remember what it is when you're 62. I think it's 66 right now. But let's say he pushes it off for four more years. The amount of money he's going to get in retirement is going to be much bigger. Plus, he's going to have four more years to put away cash into the 401k. And he still probably has 20 years after that to enjoy retirement. But he can make a big dent in this whole, you know, money nervousness thing just by putting a couple of more years between you and the retirement bell. So it's just something to think about in terms of the big picture.
Do you think there's actually any validity to his fears that he could see a loss like he saw in 08?
I think he could see a loss. I think the stock market is acting very strangely, and I don't know if it's properly priced. I don't think it is particularly. But I also know that he's not going to cash out that day. The day he retires isn't the day he's going to cash out in his 401k. It's going to get rolled to an IRA, and he's going to draw it down very small amounts over time. And I know that with a 20-year horizon, which he could have, he'll outlast it. Whatever happens, he'll come back from that as well. What is more important is that he understands that he gets more Social Security and he has more time to put away more money by working a little bit longer, and that might be the whole thing is going to just work out so much better. So I just think you need to take a little bit of a step back and look at all of the options, not just what's selling the house and paying off the debt. He's a guy who probably doesn't like debt, so he's thinking, sell. But sometimes you have to take a little bit of a bigger picture and say, yeah, Dad, but it's not worth $28,000 to get rid of this $100,000 debt right now, when we can just wait until you sell the house. And maybe it'll take a year to sell the house, but so what? You keep working another couple of years. It's going to be enough money, and we're all going to be there to help you. Sounds like he might need a little bit of reassurance and hand-holding, because these are, you know, big life decisions, and nobody really is an island. Everybody has to do it together. 404-872-0750. It's 49 minutes past the hour. I'm Elise Klink, sitting in for Clark. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more on News Talk WSB.
This is Clark. I'm not here today, but you're still getting money-saving info from money expert and author Elise Klink on News Talk WSB.
55 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Klink, sitting in for Clark. Coming up at after news, weather, and traffic, there is a new website that allows you to rent your child's toys instead of buying them. I think this is a really good idea. It is what, I mean, imagine my kids, Michael and Alex, it was like they outgrew their toys faster than they never got used up. I mean, those big plastic toys, we ended up recycling them in garage sales, but there's a new, think of this new website as a Netflix for toys. I'll tell you all about it coming up after the news, weather, and traffic at the top of the hour. In the meantime, Susan joins us on the line. Hi, Susan.
Hi, Elise. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Good.
What's on
Here's
your mind?
My question.
Mm-hmm.
We purchased a lot down in the Destin area about 6 years ago,
mm-hmm.
right before all the hurricanes hit, and the market went south. And we purchased it with two other partners. One of our partners has gone bankrupt in the last couple of years, and so we took over his portion of the property. And anyway, we are now coming up for refinance, and the bank is not approving our loan. They're saying that we don't qualify for it, which is obvious, but we have made all the payments for the last 5 years, never been late, and they have come back to us with, if we put up half of the loan amount in cash, they will finance the rest for 10 years at 8.8%.
Well, do you understand where that's coming from?
I absolutely understand where it's coming from.
Mm-hmm.
We took out a home equity line on our house,
mm-hmm.
because when our partner went bankrupt, we felt like that was the honorable thing to do. We had a contract, and we were going to see this lot through. And so we're kind of in between a rock and a hard place, because if we had half the loan amount in cash, we wouldn't really be talking.
What about the other? Okay, what about the other couple?
They cannot do anything.
And can they continue to make payments?
They can. They are making payments. Yes. So there's two of us basically covering the whole loan amount.
Right. Correct. So have you built anything in this house, or it's still, or the lot, is it still just a vacant lot?
It is. It's a vacant lot. Mm-hmm.
So vacant lots are probably the single hardest thing to finance at the moment.
Okay.
And unfortunately, I don't have any good news for you.
Okay.
So if you can put up 50% and get that loan, that's probably the very best you can do. You can shop around for a bunch of different lenders, but nobody is financing, or very few people are financing vacant lots, and especially places like Destin where, you know, everything has dropped so much in value. So I would continue to shop around and then try to figure out if there's somewhere that you can either get another home equity loan, or you can do, you know, clean out some of your 401k money and find some cash to put down on this property, so you don't have to let it go bankrupt and go back to the lender and destroy your credit. 58 minutes past the hour. I'm Elise Glang. Stay tuned. We are going to do some cool stuff coming up next. News Talk WSB.
This is Clark Howard on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Welcome back to the Clark Howard Show. I'm Elise Glink, sitting in for Clark this week. He's on vacation in Italy. I hope he's eating a lot of delicious pasta, perhaps. 404-872-0750 is our number here at the station. I am online all the time. Twitter, Facebook, thinklink.com. That's my website, thinklink.com. Other places to go in the ThinkLink community, you've got RealtyJoin, Equifax.com/blog. We do something called the Equifax Personal Finance Blog. There's MoneyWatch.com. I actually put up a really cool story on MoneyWatch last week called Foreclosure for Sale $7. And then in parentheses I wrote, no, I am not making this up. It was just a really hot story and hard to believe that, but true, that there are all kinds of properties available for sale at extraordinarily low prices. Now, why they chose $7 and not $3 or any for nothing, just give it away? Not really sure, but it was for sale at $7, and WalletPop.com and AOL picked it up, which is sort of fun, and that's, so it's been making the rounds. You can see that story and some of the other foreclosures for sale stories that I've posted on the MoneyWatch.com site. Just click on my name. It'll take you right there, and I'll put it all up on the ThinkLink.com blog with today's show notes. I just got a really cool press release, and I wanted to share it with you as soon as I got it. There's a new website called toyguru.com. I think somebody said, kangaroo and toys. How do you mix those two words together? And so what they came up with is toyguru, toyguro.com. And the whole concept behind toyguru is you can rent your child's toys instead of buying your child's toys. So green play, right? You rent instead of buying and throwing them away. And you save money because you're not actually paying the full price. You're paying a percentage, and then you get rid of the toy. So what does this allow you to do? Well, according to ToyGuru, they're like a Netflix. It's kind of a similar thing where typically you would buy a toy your child wants. They play for a few weeks. It ends up sitting in a bin until the next garage sale, which is true. With ToyGuru, instead of buying it, you rent it. So each year, the average family spends about $2,400 in new toys. With ToyGuru, if you're a member, two children can receive up to 48 toys in a year for less than $560. So the plans start as low as $35 or $36 for a shipment every other month, the average shipment being worth over $120. There are 300 toys to choose from. You get free shipping, FedEx delivery, and it's perfect for children under the age of 6. And then what happens is you sign up, create an account, and then you add items to the toy pouch, and you can keep some or all of the toys or choose to exchange them in every 30 days or 60 days. And if your kid falls in love with it, you can choose to purchase that toy at a discounted price. I think this is very, very clever. So the website is called toyguru.com. And apparently the founder of Toy Guru is going to appear on ABC Television's Shark Tank, where a panel of investors decide whether or not they want to provide funding for the company. That's going to air a little bit later on this month, March 25th. That's kind of a cool show, that Shark Tank. And we'll see. But anyway, I thought I'd give you a chance to see yourself. People are really thinking about this a little bit differently, and I think it's kind of cool. 10 minutes past the hour on the Clark Howard Show. Let's go back to the phones. Michelle joins us on the line. Hi, Michelle.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. I just have a problem with the Georgia Department of Revenue.
Really?
I just found out that I have a lien on my house, and it is from a car that I purchased in 1999.
Do you still have the car?
No, I don't have the car.
Okay.
But I purchased it from a dealer in South Carolina, and the dealer's still there,
mm-hmm.
and I financed the car when I bought it, and I know I paid income tax on, I mean, state tax. You know, I paid tax and
the
tag.
State,
and
you paid the sales tax.
Right. And I just recently found out that I have a lien on my house, and the state of Georgia put it on my house in 2009, saying that there was no sales tax ever paid on that car.
Okay. And did you go back to the dealer and ask them if they have the records?
Right. They don't.
Okay.
And they don't go, they only go back 5 years.
And do you have records?
No. No, but the only thing I do have, I have that finance agreement of where I financed the car, and it doesn't show what, you know, the tag and the tax that I paid, but it just has the whole amount that I financed.
Okay. So I think what you need to do is you need to give a call to either a CPA or an enrolled agent, probably an enrolled agent. Enrolled agents are tax professionals who are licensed to represent taxpayers before the IRS and the Georgia Department of Revenue. And I think you need to have a conversation about what you can do at this point and how you can prove this or not prove it. And they may have some good ideas for you.
Okay. Yeah, because the dealer said to me that they would have written a check to the state of Georgia. And what the Georgia Department person is telling me is that, well, they didn't have a sales tax number with us, so they just must not have paid it. To me,
okay.
There's just no proof either side.
That's right. It isn't. So what you need to do is find somebody who can make that effective argument for you, and it isn't going to be you.
Yeah. Right. Right.
So I would recommend, on my show on Sundays, sometimes I have on some members of the Georgia Association of Enrolled Agents.
Okay.
And you can go to their website at number4gaea.org.
Okay.
And you can have a conversation with one of them. They're tax preparers. They do lots and lots of returns every year. Or you can call, if you have a CPA who does your tax returns for you.
Okay.
You can call your CPA or tax preparer and have a conversation and see who did it and if anybody has any, can provide any assistance here.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. I hope it goes well, Michelle. $1,500 is a lot of money. I think I'd rather get that money back and get that lien off my house for sure. 13 minutes past the hour on the Clark Howard Show, 404-872-0750. Diane joins us on the line. Hi, Diane.
Hey, good afternoon.
How are you?
I'm great. I am lucky enough to take a trip this summer to Portugal and do some cycling.
Wow, I love that.
Yeah, it's a dream come true, and it's the first time I've thought that I should probably get some trip insurance, and I don't know how to go about doing that.
You know, I think trip insurance is a really good idea. Tell me about your regular health insurance.
Oh, God, it's a major name, fairly stout coverage.
Okay. What does it do for you if you're in other countries and something happens to you?
I will have to check.
It's really important to check. So, for example, if you are older and on Medicare, they cover nothing abroad.
Okay.
So you have to buy travel insurance, but you really have to get the medical insurance coverage.
Okay.
And my mother-in-law, thankfully, always did this. And when she got sick in Guatemala one year, or excuse me, she was in Costa Rica, we were able to fly her to a private hospital from the nowhere land she was at to the private hospital in the main town of San Jose and have the best doctors in Costa Rica work with her. And that was because she had medical trip insurance, too.
Got it.
So I think that that's the most important part. Now, how much are you spending on the trip?
About $8,000 a person.
It's very significant. Are you going with a group?
Just two of us.
Right, but is it a group organizing
going
it?
To meet with a tour, yes.
Yeah, so the tour may have trip insurance that you can buy.
Okay.
And then you just really, again, after you check out your own policy, you can check out that one. In terms of medical insurance. And then what I'd love for you to do, there are a couple of websites that Clark Howard has on his website.
Mm-hmm.
And what I would just go to clarkhoward.com, and in the search box, type up travel insurance. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And that will give you, I think, a long way towards, you know, different companies and how he sees it. Because he really has some very specific ideas on how to cover yourself, and he has a whole category on travel insurance.
Okay.
But since you're going on a trip that's very physical, again, you definitely want to make sure that you're getting exactly the right kind of health coverage.
Yeah, I was more worried about blowing out my knee before I went and then not being able to go.
Yeah, no problem. I get it. But I'm really concerned that if you blow out your knee while you're on a mountain somewhere, that somebody's able to, you know, get you where you need to go. So I think one of the sites that Clark likes is insuremytrip.com.
Okay.
But go to his site and take a read. I can put some links up on my blog later today as well. And then first check, of course, what your insurance company covers, because what you're trying to do is not duplicate, but fill in the missing pieces.
Very good.
All right?
I appreciate your help.
Oh, you're welcome. Enjoy the trip. It sounds awesome. 17 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. Cecilia joins us on the line from Fort Worth. Hi, Cecilia.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm okay.
What's on your mind?
A couple of years ago, I started putting a little bit of money in my 403B. At the same time, I had two kids graduate high school, one start college, and I really didn't look into it, but now that I looked into it, I asked for prices on expenses and fees, and I really got the runaround. I couldn't get a pat answer about what I was paying. Come to find out that the fund families are not that good. So I was wondering, is there a way I can get out of that or change to something else?
Well, it depends. First of all, a 403B, are you a teacher?
I work at a hospital.
So what you can do is see if you are able to switch into another plan. Sometimes they have a couple of different plans, and maybe there's a better mix that you can get on your funds. But if not, then you it's not that you can switch out of it. You probably have to leave the money there until you leave the company, either retire or you leave the company and go somewhere else. Then you can roll it over into an IRA. But going forward, you should probably think about investing in a Roth IRA.
Okay.
Do you do that?
No, I was just looking into all that now.
I love Roth IRAs. As long as you fall within the earnings limit, are you a single parent or married?
Yeah, no, I've been divorced 8 years. I'm single.
Okay, so you can earn up to about $108,000 or $109,000 and still contribute up to $5,000 to a Roth IRA or $6,000 if you are over the age of 50.
Okay, so do I need to, because that plan is not that great, just decrease what I'm putting in the 403B?
Well, if you can't switch the funds and you don't like them, yeah, I wouldn't put money in there. I would take your $5,000 a year or $6,000 that you can save, and I would put it into a Roth IRA, which is after-tax money anyway.
Okay.
I would do that. And then you can open it up wherever you like. You can open it up at Vanguard or Fidelity or Charles Schwab. The investing world is your oyster, and you can open it up anywhere. But I would open it up where you have really cheap index funds, and right now that's Vanguard, Fidelity, or Charles Schwab.
Okay. Now, the money that's in the 403B, should I put that in the money market part of the fund?
No, I mean, you're going to still get charged a fee for putting it in the money market part. What you want to do is pick the funds that do the best. So if they have index funds, go with the index fund. I don't know what kind of options they give you, but I would try to pick the funds that have had the best overall return and charge you the least amount of money. But typically 403B funds stink. And they stink because I feel like people must get kickbacks for putting in really mediocre funds, or they don't know any better, the people who do it, and so you end up with really mediocre, expensive funds, and the only people who pay the price for that are you and your fellow workers.
I know. I was shocked.
Yeah, it's shocking, and it's annoying. So now, put little, don't put that much in, and stick to doing your Roth IRA and trying to put away as much as you can outside of that as well.
Okay, if I do I'll do a Roth, and then what? In addition to that, what?
Just open up a brokerage account, after-tax brokerage account, and stash away absolutely as much money as you can. If you open it all up at Vanguard or at Fidelity, you can also open up an outside of tax, a non-taxable account, just a regular brokerage account. You know, you'll pay your taxes on what you earn, but there you can just stash away as much money as you can, and I think that's a very good thing to have as well. And, you know, the final thing is anybody who doesn't like what their 403B or their 401K plan offerings are, go to Human Resources and see if you can get them to change it. And if you put together a strong enough case, they might let you. 21 minutes past the hour. I'm Elise Glink. Stay tuned for more of the Clark Howard Show on News Talk WSB.
This is Clark. I'm not here today, but you're still getting money-saving info from money expert and author Elise Glink on News Talk WSB.
26 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Glink sitting in for Clark today. We've got more coming up in the next half hour as well. I'll be here through Wednesday. Clark's taking a little break, a few days off. I was just having a conversation with Alan, who's running the board today, about hybrid cars. And I heard a story that really made me open my eyes the other day. One of my producers, my television producers, told me that her hybrid, which is 3.5 years old, the car, the battery, died. Completely died. So she went in to see what was going on, and they said, oh, you're going to have to replace this battery. It was a Toyota. And the bill was going to be $5,500. She goes, oh, my God, I'm 4 months away from paying off this car, and I'm going to have to pay $5,500 to replace the battery. And the guy's like, yeah, these batteries, they don't last long. They die, and then you have to, you know, pay up. So I know everybody's out there, you know, thinking, well, I'm just going to save all this money on gas by buying a hybrid and getting better gas mileage. But you can go a long way, even in a Hummer, if you don't have to replace that battery every 3.5 years. So if you are considering a hybrid, the question that you have to ask, first of all, is how often should I expect to have to replace this battery? And have them show you in the paperwork. Second question is, how much is it to replace the battery? Because if the answer is $5,500 and you're going to have to replace that battery every 3 to 5 years that you own that car, I don't think you're saving any energy. I don't think it's a particularly green move, and I sure don't think it's a good move for your finances. So just a little bit of extra to ask. And for my friend, it's all worked out pretty well because she made a stink about the battery dying in 3.5 years. And so they gave it to her installed for $500 at her dealer. And I don't know what dealer she was at, but that worked out for her. But I wouldn't count on that for when you have to go and replace one of those batteries. Even Clark got punked by that when he bought the very first hybrid out there, had to replace the battery, $8,000. 404-872-0750. It's almost 29 minutes past the hour. I'm Elise Glink. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more on News Talk WSB.
Clark Howard on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Six minutes past the hour on the Clark Howard Show. I'm Elise Glink. Thanks so much for joining us today on News Talk WSB. So we were putting up some more information about the Home and Houseware Show. The International Home and Houseware Show. And today was the day when everybody who is in the cooking industry, basically, is there and they're working on their lines of cooking. So, for example, Paula Deen has cookware, and Rachel Ray has cookware, and Emeril has cookware, and, you know, it goes on and on. And so you walk through the halls, and it's a little bit like Food Network jumps to life, which was sort of fun yesterday. But when you think about all these people with their different kinds of cookware, you have to ask yourself, are you going to really cook like them just because you're using Paula Deen's pots, right? The only way your food is going to taste like Paula Deen is if you, first of all, start with about 6 pounds of butter, and melt it in the pot and then add whatever you add to it and then add more butter. She's so funny in her shows. I don't know if you've ever seen this, but she talks about just a little more butter, a little more butter, a little more butter. With Rachel Ray, you know, I always say to myself, I love her show. I love Rachel Ray. I'm a huge fan. And I watch her 30-minute meals, and I'll make them from time to time. It never takes me 30 minutes. I always feel like I'm getting ripped off. It should be like the 42-minute meal or the 58-minute meal. The food is good, especially with some of her shortcuts. And, boy, she does love mayo. But the point is it never takes me 30 minutes. And every time I think it's going to, and I pull out a Rachel Ray pot, of course, it never does. And so, you know, I'm a big, for those of you who've been listening to my show for all these years or having me fill in for Clark, then you know that I love to cook. And so making your own meals is a great way to save money. And it's also a great way to be healthy and feed your family healthy food. But it certainly takes more time and effort than, you know, some of these cooking show hosts would let on. So it was, I was laughing yesterday as I'm walking through the International Home and Houseware Show because they all have a new line of pots, a new line of knives, the latest, greatest, all the rest. And it's a lot of fun to see. But you're going to pay a little bit of a premium for some of that equipment because the stars have to be paid. And I'm not sure it actually makes sense. I almost would rather you buy Rachel Ray's cookbook, although you can get so much of the stuff online, than pay for a Rachel Ray pot when you can buy the same thing for a little bit less money. Save money where you can, and then go and get the recipes so you can make the food, even if it takes a little bit longer, taste just as good. 404-872-0750 in the Clark Howard Show. Let's see if we can knock out a few calls here. Rich joins us on the line from Smyrna. Hi, Rich.
Oh, hi, Hugh.
How are you?
Good. I have a typical, I guess, mod horror story. I have a 6.250 first interest only in a second, and it's finally Freddie.
Okay.
A second, which is Freddie, had some business and health issues a couple of years ago, of which I'm now fine.
Okay.
I tried to get a modification on two occasions, in short. I did the forbearance where I missed several payments and didn't make three timely payments after. And both times, we were denied the modification. I was offered only a piggyback of the arrear onto my loan balance.
Correct. They were offering to take the amount you didn't pay, stick it on the back of the loan, and call it a day and start off fresh again.
So, in short, I did not sign the paper. However, I continued to make the payment. And at a point in the future, they stopped taking my payment and said I pulled the back payment. So I tried a third modification. They've now sent me a piggyback again. And I'm deciding whether to sign it. I do not want to go back into foreclosure status, which they put me in. That suspended. We made three timely payments, and now I have the piggyback paperwork to sign and get in immediately.
So you should sign it and get it in.
Okay.
Do you know why? Because usually with these forbearance, what they'll do is they'll bring you current on your loan. They will probably wipe out all of the back payment fees and the late fee and all the rest. And you'll get to start fresh, and that's worth something to you.
Yes, that is. I guess the bothersome component to was they promised and they didn't, but we've heard that a million times. But at least I know I will be current. I think they're not going to waive the fees.
But they're not going to waive the fees? Are you sure?
They say my negotiator, he is called, is useless.
Okay, well, get in line with that, right?
I
they're all new. They're all useless, as far as I can tell.
I guess the question would be, finally, if I go ahead, I sign the paper, and I send them back, that will preclude me for doing another attempt to get a modification, because I can't refinance right now.
You won't get another offer.
Okay.
If you sign these papers, you're probably not going to get another offer, but you're not going to get another offer anyway.
Okay.
I mean, it's interesting because the number of people who are seeking modifications and are emailing me with their complaints has really dropped off in the last couple of weeks, and that dovetails with what the government is telling me, which is that pretty much everybody who's eligible for a modification, this is their line, and has gone through the system, has pretty much it's been working out. Either they get it or they don't get it, but they're starting to finally, you know, catch up and get in the groove. And they're talking about shutting down this, the HAMP program, which has been a colossal failure any way you look at it, in my mind. But it's not going to help you at all. Now, there is some talk in D.C. about doing mass modifications for some people, but you're going to take a huge risk that you won't qualify, and you're going to be in worse position than you are right now.
Yeah.
So I think the way to go is if your health and business issues are behind you, sign the papers, start fresh, see if they'll waive the fees. If they won't waive the fees, just have them put the fees at the back of the loan as well, and start working on paying down this loan.
Okay.
It's not optimal. It's not optimal, and I guarantee that you have not been treated properly. But I don't know what else to tell you.
Well, I guess at the end of the day, I will, but I hate renting my home because the 6.250 interest only I'm renting as a matter of common sense.
You are, but you signed that loan, right?
That's right. That's
and the problem is that, you know, and I think there's an expectation that, and I don't disagree, that people should be helped in some way. The government has certainly helped the banking industry and Wall Street and pretty much saved them from colossal ruin, which, by the way, would have hurt all of us, too.
Yeah.
But I would have liked to have seen people like you who have had some serious difficulties but are now back on their feet. I would have liked to have seen you get some help. This is what help looks like, though, for a lot of people. You can file a complaint if you know, after you sign these papers, if you feel like you haven't been treated well, you can file a complaint with the OCC. The website is helpwithmybank.gov, and you can tell them that you're unhappy, and they will pay attention to the email. I don't know if it'll do anything, but they definitely will pay attention to it. Nobody should be treated badly in this process.
Well, I appreciate it, and I didn't know if there was a political angle or another angle that might offer something different. I hear these stories often, and I know I'm 4 days to make my decision.
I think you're not doing wrong by taking it. If you look on my website, on the moneywatch.com site, I wrote a blog a year and a half ago called Loan Modification Hell, Join the Club. There are almost 1,000 comments on that blog post.
Yeah.
And I've written 25 other blogs or 30 blogs with the loan modification hell in the title, and I have over 2,000 comments from people just like you who have had a nightmare walking through the process. But what I love about it is that they're all there educating each other and sharing their experiences. And you may just want, you know, this afternoon before the end of the day, you may want to take a quick look at that blog and some of the other blog posts and see if there isn't something there that will help you.
Exactly.
I don't know if there is, but there might be.
Last quick question. If you do not have a filing fee, it's an investor loan. You're almost impossible to get. Is that right?
That is correct.
Okay.
It's just really awful all the way around.
Okay. At least, thank you.
I'm sorry, Rich. I don't have better news for you.
Okay. Bye.
Bye. 45 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB, 404-872-0750. At some point in time, the book is going to be written on how poorly Americans have been treated throughout this entire last five-year period. Real Americans, Main Street Americans, the ones who are listening to me right now, and I just don't think it's going to be a pretty tale. I'm really so disappointed by what's happened. 404-872-0750. Tony joins us on the line from Loganville. Hi, Tony.
Hey.
What's going on?
I just have a question about selling a house. Naturally, I have a house. We've been living in it 5 years, and it's come up time now we have to move somewhere else. We don't have to, but family issues, we have to move somewhere else. I can't sell the house because I owe more than what it's worth naturally. So I was thinking about renting it out. But then I got an offer from a friend of mine if I would owner finance it for him with a down payment, and he would pay me a higher interest rate than what I'm paying, that he would take it over from me. Is that possible?
It is possible, because what you're doing is you're actually the way I would structure it maybe is a lease with an option to buy.
Mm-hmm.
And that way you maintain ownership of the property until he's actually ready to buy. That's one way of doing it. It's you could also do an installment sale where every year you sell him a chunk of it. Or you could just do the loan and carry it back, and I'm glad he'd be paying you a higher interest rate. You just have to understand that you're putting a huge amount at risk, but it does get you out of a tight spot. So if you go this route, please, 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 I want you to hire your own real estate attorney, and I want you to have proper papers drawn up. I want them to be filed correctly. I want you to have correct closing, and I want you to protect yourself with these documents. You'll need a loan document. You'll need a for sale document. You're going to need some other documentation. You have some responsibilities as the owner of disclosures that you have to make to a buyer by law. I want to make sure all of that is done properly. And no matter how good a friend he is, trust me, I have heard stories that would make your hair curl. And it started, you know, it's not saying this couldn't be a great move, which is how we started the show today. Somebody in the exact position where she's already done the loan, and now she wants to get out of it.
Okay.
She put up seller financing, but it can go wrong any number of ways. Now, I have a lot of information on thinklink.com about seller financing, so you can go there and just type seller financing or owner financing into the search engine, and up will pop maybe 300 stories on it. I've written a lot about it, but promise me, if you go this route, and it can work out great, you will hire a real estate attorney on your own to represent you.
Well, I just didn't know if it was possible if I held a mortgage company.
Well, the problem is that, and this is really the problem, and that's why I'm sort of steering you away from this idea of holding the paper. When you sell the house, your loan becomes due. And so technically, your loan can be called and you owe the lender. So you could be considered in default of your mortgage.
Okay.
So you just have to understand that is something that you're doing. Maybe your loan doesn't say that. I don't know. But I would certainly take a look and talk to the real estate attorney about how to legally structure this so that you get what you want and what you need, and your friend gets what he wants and what he needs.
Okay.
And there are ways to do it.
Sounds good. Thank
you. All right. You're welcome. Thanks for calling the show. It's 49 minutes past the hour on the Clark Howard Show. Again, this is the biggest issue, and I just want to cover it one more time. When you have a loan outstanding on a property and you sell it, selling it triggers the due on sale clause. That means you are supposed to pay off the loan in full at the closing. If you don't do this, technically you're in default on most mortgages that I've seen, because the property is the anchor for the loan, right? It's the collateral for the mortgage. And you sell the collateral, the loan is just standing there sort of off on its own. It's not tied to anything anymore, and the lender isn't protected. So there are ways to get around this, but a real estate attorney needs to be involved. You got to do it legally, and you got to make sure you protect yourself. It's 50 minutes past the hour on the Clark Howard Show. I'm Elise Glink. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more on News Talk WSB.
This is Clark. I'm not here today, but you're still getting money-saving info from money expert and author Elise Glink on News Talk WSB.
55 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Glink. Thanks so much for joining us on the show today. I'll be back tomorrow. Filling in for Clark tomorrow and Wednesday as well, and happy to help you out there. We are live online all the time at thinklink.com. Maybe not at 3 in the morning, but you know what? There's always something going on in the ThinkLink community, and we would very much like to offer you an invitation to join us. You can follow me on Twitter. You can join our Facebook fan page. We are active on LinkedIn. You want to link to me on LinkedIn? Sure, I'm game. And then we also do a whole lot of things on my website, thinklink.com. And by the way, the show notes are already up. And then, of course, there's realtyjoin.com and homemoneywatch.com and the Equifax personal finance blog. So all things Glink if you need it. Terry joins us on the line now from Duluth. Hi, Terry.
Hi, Elise. Thanks for taking my call. My son's graduating from school. He's going to be a teacher when he graduates at the end of this semester.
Great.
And we've been made aware of a program called a Good Neighbor Program through HUD, and I just wondered if you had any experience or advice with that program.
Yeah, it's interesting because FHA and HUD, well, HUD is, FHA is part of HUD, the Department of Housing and Urban Development. There are some opportunities if you're a teacher, and I think if you're a policeman or maybe a fireman, you may be able to obtain an FHA loan. It's FHA you're looking for. Through at the below market interest rate, or maybe at a somewhat of a discount, and you may be able to do, you may be able to qualify directly for that. The place to go for information, and this is what I always do, you basically want to go online and search for the FHA or FHA loan teachers program, and it's called Teacher Next Door FHA. I just did it, and it's FHAinfo.com has something on it. It all pops up, and it does allow you to get a discount. But you have to, there's some qualifications that you have to go through, and that's where you can find out more information.
Do you know anyone who has experience with that program?
You know, I don't actually know anybody who qualified for that program. I do know it exists, though.
We're just wondering, in terms of strategy, should he look for the property first or look for the school that he would like to teach at first? Because we know that the house has to be located close to where he's going to be working.
I think he needs to get a job first.
Yeah, me too.
And then he knows where he's working. I mean, this program is from, I believe, from the HUD Homes program. So it's for FHA foreclosures.
Okay.
So I think the benefit is that you get to buy it at a 50% discount from the list price. But I think it's a HUD home, so it's foreclosures. So what I would do, since you have other qualifications, is figure out where he's going to be. And once he figures out where he's going to be and he's got a little bit of money saved, then you want to work with somebody who's qualified to actually work with HUD homes, HUD home foreclosures. And there's a whole lot of interesting stuff that goes on behind the scenes with that. And I have more of that information up on thinklink.com. Just go in and look at HUD homes. All right, guys, the music's starting. That means that our time is up. So sorry about that. But I'll be back tomorrow, 1 o'clock. And Wednesday as well, as Clark continues to enjoy his little Italian vacazione. I don't even know if that's a word, but it sounds good. In the meantime, Sean Hannity is next. Have a great night, everybody.